And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. This is your host, Matt Watson. Today, excited to be joined by another founder here in Kansas City, where I am. Mr. Bo Lace is with us, the founder and CEO of Lula. Very cool company that started in a B2C type of business model and pivoted to B2B and has been extremely successful. We're going to talk today about his pivot and, you know, the success that came from it and lessons learned along the way. Before we get it started, I do want to remind you today's episode is brought to you by Fullscale, which is my company. We have over 300 employees helping everybody do all types of software development, front end, back end, mobile, QA, whatever your tech stack is, we can probably help you. Check us out at fullscale.io. Bo, welcome to the show, man.
Yep. Thanks for having me, Matt.
You know, are you still in the mode of Kansas City Chiefs, like Super Bowl victory, or is that kind of worn off yet?
No, I think it's worn off. We still got some employees out running around with their new championship pullovers. but yeah, I think we've turned the page and got back to work, but everyone's still enjoying it.
So I'm really excited to talk about your journey today. You know, being that you're in Kansas City, you and I have met a few times. You were actually on this podcast a long time ago. And you guys, you know, probably under the radar here, have built a very successful company. Most people probably have no idea who your company is, and that's usually the case. But, you know, I'd love to learn a little more about how this company started. I know originally, you know, you set out to build a B2C, you know, business to consumer, more consumer facing businesses, which I personally find to be extremely hard. And I think that's what you're going to tell us today is why it was so hard and why you pivoted. So I'm really excited to hear more about the story today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we started as a B2C. We actually started serving homeowners. And the reason why we got started is my wife and I, in 2017, we bought our first home together. And it was a renovation project. And I thought I could GC this thing and manage all the contractors, and really found it difficult to find, you know, quality contractors that were also accountable. And through that process, it was very painful. We paid a couple contractors that never actually came back to finish the work. Managing their schedules and actually getting them to show up on time was a challenge. And so, you know, during that process, with having a background in IT, I was just, you know, with advanced technology and instant communication, it's like, you know, there's got to be a better way. So when we first went to market, and it was like November of 2017, it was a homeowners app that immediately connected homeowners with instantly available and fully vetted contractors. And then we facilitated the transaction. So we acted almost like an escrow service where, you know, we'd connect a homeowner with a fully vetted contractor, verify that the homeowner had the funds available, but would not release those funds until the homeowner was, you know, satisfied with the work and happy. And then we released those funds to the contractor from our platform. But, you know, as we got into the market in a, you know, over about a year, I would say, we started to look at our data and noticed that about, you know, 80% of our volume was coming from about 20% of those, our member base, if you will. So we started picking up the phone and talking to these customers. And they ended up being DIY landlords or real estate agents that had multiple single family rentals. And they just found it much easier to use our on-demand platform than to go to your lead generation platforms, if you will. It was faster to get a faster resolution for their residents through our platform than it was through those lead generation platforms. So we actually started taking a look at the property management space, and that's when we actually decided to move into the property management space and focus on the single family rentals.
So when you started this, would you say you were primarily competing with the likes of like Angie's? And I think there's like Thumbtack and like some different sites, right? Like that, right? Like, so did you set out from the beginning, like, hey, we're going to go compete with Home Advisor and Angie's List? Like, that's where you started?
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's where we started. And those are giants, right, in the space.
Yeah.
B2C models, you know, can be very expensive from advertising perspective without like a distribution channel partner. And it wasn't that we were, you know, trying to target them specifically, but that's just the space that we found ourselves in. I think the difference is that, you know, we had a highly curated network of contractors, right? Whereas in a lead generation platform, you don't always know who you're going to be working with. And that was the struggle for us, is when I actually used those platforms when we were trying to find contractors for our renovation before I got into this space, and just found it very difficult to peel through and find the right contractors that would actually follow through on what they wanted.
Well, and I know I have some experiences for multiple reasons. Like, so my company At Capacity, we kind of live in the same space. Like, our customers are plumbing, HVAC, and electrical. And so I have some experience in this industry from, you know, different perspective than you, but, you know, related experience. And I mean, there are some people that won't show up to your house unless they know they're going to charge like $400 just to repair your toilet, right? Yeah. Like, exactly. The cost of what they also charge is astronomical. And if you're, and I don't want to say they're taking advantage of people, but their business model and how they do that, like, they get in your home and they really can try and charge a lot of money, right? Where, especially if you're like, hey, I have these 10 rental homes, I'm trying to get this crap done as cheap as possible, you might be looking for a totally different contractor, is my point, than the one that's, you know, advertising on TV that probably is charging premium once they get into your house.
Yeah, absolutely. What, you know, some of the learnings we found is, you know, we thought we were going to go from the B2C space to the property management space, and we thought we knew everything, right? And it was a big learning curve. You know, there's a, you know, it's very price sensitive in the property management mm-hmm. space. So you got to have some really competitively priced contractors. There's NTEs, not to exceeds, right? So what that means is, let's say we have a customer that's got a global NTE of $300. We're pre-authorized to go do work up to $300, but if we get on site and it's going to cost more than that, then we've got to get authorization from, you know, either the asset owner or our customer, the property manager. So it's really important as we're onboarding contractors to our platform that they're a good fit for this space. And we've got to, you know, a lot of, you know, steps and vetting process that they go through in order to make sure they're a good fit, they're competitively priced, they're competent in what they're doing. And then obviously making sure that they have, you know, general liability insurance, workers' comp, making sure that they have a professional license. And then the very last step is a background check, because they're going into occupied homes, right? So it's very important on the front end.
Well, and going back to the original business model, You started with a two-sided marketplace. And I feel like a lot of other entrepreneurs have this similar idea that always involves a two-sided marketplace, be it a dating website or a company like this, whatever, where you've got to have two different parties involved to make the transaction, right? And the problem is, like, your marketing part of this is twice as hard, right? Not only you talk about, oh, we have to find good contractors, you have to put a whole lot of effort into going find good contractors and vetting them and all that. But then you still don't have the homeowners and the demand to hire them, right? So it's like you have to do double the marketing effort. And that's why I feel like these sort of marketplaces are super challenging.
Yeah, marketplaces are super challenging. You know, this isn't my first startup, but it's my first time with a marketplace. It's almost three-sided, because you've got, you know, almost four-sided, if you will. I mean, you've got your residents, the renters, right? You've got your contractors, but then we also have our customers, the property management companies, but then we're also dealing with asset owners, which are customers of our customers a lot of times as well, larger approvals. You know, we have a pretty solid playbook now, but out of the gates, it was really difficult, right? It's like the chicken and egg problem, right? Like, what do you get? You can't start taking work until you have the contractors, but we've gotten much, much better in that process as we move forward.
So as you started out in the B2C, obviously that was the struggle of trying to find, okay, how do we find the homeowners or the right kind of customer? And as you mentioned, you were doing the customer research. For kudos to you to actually doing the customer research and not thinking you're just the smartest guy in the room. You're actually talking to the customers, and you keep seeing this echo chamber of like, look, these are homeowners. They're people that own multiple properties, or they're in real estate. They're trying to flip real estate, whatever it is. But it's like they're dealing with multiple houses. And so at what point did that light bulb go off? And you're like, you know what, maybe we should change, you know, our model.
Well, I mean, I think it was, you know, the light bulb moment really was when we started seeing the volume coming from these individuals, right? The DIY landlords and whatnot that really had a big pain point. Because make no mistake, like in property management, managing, coordinating maintenance still to this day remains the biggest challenge and headache.
Yeah.
I mean, it's time consuming. On average, there's a stat I read the other day where property managers spend 19 hours on average a week just managing, coordinating maintenance. It's consequential. Meaning that, you know, if a repair goes bad, it can lead to negative reviews. And there's also data that supports that one out of every three renters, one of the main reasons or main factors that weigh into their decision of renewing a lease is how it was performed, right?
And absolutely.
Important, the service delivery, but also being competitively priced in this space.
So that happened to my niece. She had an apartment here in Kansas City, and for whatever reason, her apartment was on the lower floor, and it kept flooding. For whatever reason, it kept flooding from the apartment above her all the way down, like over and over and over again. And yeah, guess what? She moved out. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, especially if you're renting a place that's like a dumpster fire, you're not going to stay there. You're like, I'm out of here if the property maintenance isn't done the right way. But my big question for you, though, is, so you realize, okay, most of our volume is coming from this type of customer. How hard was it for you to pivot and be like, you know what? We're only going to focus on that. We're going to say no to all this kind of business. Because I feel like that's the hardest part as being an entrepreneur. It's like, you don't want to say no. You're like, I want all of the customers. I want everyone. Right. How hard was it you to say no? We're not going to do this anymore.
It was really hard because we had 2,500 homeowners that were on the platform, right? That we were still doing business with. And it's like, you have to make, we came to a point where we needed to make a decision of where the biggest opportunity was for growth. And we decided that it was the property management space. And it was still a struggle for us to tell these 2,500 customers that were just homeowners, right? With a single property that we're no longer going to be able to service you. You know, it's interesting that you asked that question. I was in the Pipeline Entrepreneurs Program that's here in Kansas City. They actually really helped me get comfortable with deciding, you know what, the property management space is your biggest opportunity. You really need to let go. It was during that year-long process of programming through Pipeline that they helped me, you know, say, okay, you've got to stop serving the homeowners in order to be the best that you can be in the property management space. And so it was the bigger opportunity, and that's what we went chasing, and it's worked out well for us.
So when you made that change, what all did it affect? Did you completely redo your website? Did you make major changes to your software, changes to your marketing, changes to your sales team? Like, changed everything probably, right?
Everything, right? Even the platform. And we had a good foundation, but the homeowners app didn't exist anymore. We had to refactor our entire platform to really focus on streamlining that maintenance process for property managers and their residents. And then, you know, I think one of the, in this, you know, as you talked about the other company that you have in this space, what we found that's most important is on the front end of that work order request. So when we get a request from a resident or a renter, right, with a maintenance request, curating that work order and before it ever gets kicked out to our network is really important because it improves the percentage of a one-trip resolution. And so what we do is we have, you know, AI is really popular now. We've been using it for years, but obviously with ChatGPT and OpenAI and all that, it makes things a little bit faster. But we have a level of AI that actually communicates with a resident on the front end via SMS, text message. So when a work order comes in, we're actually seeing first if we can actually avoid a trip altogether. You know, maybe it's resetting a garbage disposal. Maybe it's changing out batteries in a thermostat. Right, to see if we can save the asset owner money by just helping the resident go through some different items in order to try to fix their issue themselves. But if we can't, then we really try to get as much information that we can, pictures, even if it's a label, you know, on a HVAC or hot water tank, so we know everything about that appliance or mechanical, and package that up and then kick it out to our network. That way, our contractors that we have on our platform know everything there is to know about what they're getting in, the tools they need to bring, and they're prepared. Because, you know, something we know about you know, whether it's homeowners or renters, is like people don't like contractors in and out of their house multiple times if they can help it, right? You want them to get in, know what the issue is, get it resolved, and get out. And so that front end of the work order has been really important in how we triage and curate that before it ever gets kicked out.
Well, and that sounds like a feature that the property owners would care a little more about than the homeowner, right? Like the homeowner may probably did a lot of those steps because they're trying to save themselves money already. Like they probably know, like, I'm checked the battery and the thermostat, yeah, right? But if it's the property owner, it's different because the renter probably doesn't look in it. They're lazy. They're lazy as hell. They're just going to call property manager and be like, I'm fix this crap, right? So this is an example of a feature you probably had to build that was more specific to this new direction.
Absolutely, 100%. It's like we get work orders, it's like no water, right? Well, okay, no water. Like, is it no hot water? Is it no water at all in the house? Is it, you know, what is it one faucet? Like, so you really, and you're right, you know, renters will just put in a quick work order and then it's, you know, off their plate. But we really try to curate that work order to really truly understand what the issue is so that we get the right person out too. Right? Like we don't want to run our contractors out, you know, the wrong contractor out. If it needed, you know, an appliance pro and we send a plumber, you know, that doesn't do any good. So that front end is really important.
So your story here brings up a topic and a concept that I talk about quite a bit that I think is super critical for other entrepreneurs to understand. So your guys' software, if you back up to the very beginning, is not that much different than it is today, right? It's the same concept. We have somebody who owns a property, we have work orders, we need somebody to do the work, and we need them to fix it. The concept of that is largely the same, and I'm sure you would probably agree with me that like 60 to 80% of the software is relatively the same. But the difference of that like other 20% is dramatically different, right? Between the homeowner version and the property management version, because the property management version is trying to save money on things. Like you said, like that was a great use case, but also they want different reporting and they're like, oh, I have 100 different properties in 10 different cities. And I have all this other special things that I need done that the homeowners wouldn't care about. And that 20% of the difference is a huge difference. And the reason this is so important is back to the beginning of the conversation. If you say, look, I'm going to build a software product that is both perfect for a homeowner and perfect for a property management company, you would have failed because that 20% has to be dramatically different. And you're really going to struggle to serve like both customer bases, right? And so, but that's the hard part as entrepreneurs saying, you know what, I'm going to go all in and build that 20% that is super, super special for just this niche.
Yeah, but it's important, right? And I think for us, you know, it's always scary as an early stage company. And I still consider us early, although we've been around for a while now and having some decent success. But it's scary whenever you pivot and you're cutting off a revenue stream, right?
Yeah.
Because revenue is king, right? But we recognize that we could not serve both parties well, and there was going to be enough changes that needed to be made for that 20% that it was going to be significant enough. There's just no way that we could have done, you know, had two platforms out there and trying to operate well for both. So, yeah. I mean, we have to integrate into the property management software our customers use, right? So we have to integrate
totally
into
different.
There's a lot of KPIs that, you know, homeowners don't care about, but our property customers do. I mean, you know, average time to completion, average time to, you know, scheduling, you know, percent of one trip resolutions, you know, how percent of trip avoidances, average repair value, how's my asset performing, how's my portfolio performing. And so we have just so much data and KPIs that our customers want, and it's becoming more and more important.
What I love about this is it just highlights that fact, though, of like you can build a software product that does this core like 60 to 80% of the work. And I know there's people who are listening like, oh, I built this thing and I really want to sell it to these people. But there might be another use case that's just slightly adjacent, kind of like you. You're like, if I just move over here a little bit, all of a sudden this is going to be a lot easier in a different business model. But like 60 to 80% of the product is largely the same. And kudos for you for figuring that out. And I'd love to talk more about how that has kind of ignited, you know, a ton of growth for you guys. So, you know, selling to an individual homeowner sounds like a pain, but it seems easy enough. There's a lot of different ways to market them and find them. How do you market to property management companies? Like, how do you find them what is your go-to-market strategy to go find them?
Yeah. You know, this is one of those industries, one of the few industries that literally hasn't changed for decades, right? So a lot of it is word of mouth, of course, you know, your organic marketing activities, you know, SEO and all that. But really the industry events in this space is where we get a lot
trade
of
our shows. Customers.
Trade shows. It really is. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but one thing that, you know, we have, you know, some institutional investors and what they loved about our business is that our actual marketing spend is very small. And But also we could get, you know, we have a customer that's got, you know, 5,000 doors. Right. So one customer with 5,000 doors is a big revenue opportunity. You know, we have some bigger and some smaller, but, you know, it's a lot less expensive than going after one homeowner with one house.
Yeah. Right?
It's a lot less competitive. So trade shows really has been one of the best places for us. And a lot of the, you know, your organizations too, that they have that we're part of, that the industry, you know, authorities in the space get together. And so that's really where a lot of our business is being driven from.
Did you guys try some other go-to-market strategies besides trade shows that didn't work very well?
You know, look, I think, you know, early on before we had, you know, partnerships, we'll get into that here in a little bit, it's been great for us as well. But, you know, we did the paid marketing thing, right? We did the, you know, the pay-per-click, Facebook ads and all that early on, and just spent an outrageously amount of money that just didn't have a good return on investment. We probably weren't doing it that well either, but it just wasn't a great marketing activity for us. So we really don't do a lot of paid marketing. I think we do advertise in a few industry newsletters that are have our ideal customer audience. But besides that, really, it's a lot of trade shows, a lot of word of mouth. And I do a lot of presentations when I can within the industry.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about having different guests on the podcast is the go-to-market strategy of every company is 100% dramatically different from one to another. And it surprises some people that trade shows are still the big thing. But when you're dealing with like a really specific niche industry, that might be the, you know, once, twice, three times a year. It's the only time you get all of those people together and all of those people are looking, you know, for solutions, right? And it's a great opportunity to, you know, in one step to target them. And trade shows still work extremely well for specific industries. So you mentioned partnerships. Tell us about partnerships and how that's also been a really good go-to-market strategy for you besides just the trade shows.
Yeah. So, you know, we partnered with one of the largest property management software platforms in the U.S., AppFolio. We have a deep two-way integration with them. They've been great strategic partners. We're in their marketplace. We're the only tech-enabled services company in their marketplace called StackFolio. And so we get a lot of leads from them, from their member base. I think they have 8 to 8.5 million doors on their platform. So they've been a great strategic partner. That partnership may even get a little bit deeper here soon. Time will tell here over the next couple of weeks, but we got some cool things we're working on with them. Property Meld is another one. It's a maintenance platform that really melds all the communication around maintenance together in one platform. And we just signed a partnership with them. That's going to be announced here publicly on the 15th. And then Turbo Tenant. So AppFolio and Property Meld have our ideal customer segments. We have a lot of shared customers today, so they're great partners and distribution partners for us. And then Turbo Tenant is a platform that plays in the DIY landlord segment. So if you know, have, you know, two or three properties that you're renting out, you may not be a good fit for an AppFolio, right? Because they really want, they go upstream with larger property management companies. But TurboTenant has 700,000 doors, I think, on their platform. And we have a deep integration and partnership with them. So we're getting back into that DIY landlord segment with them. Whereas our sales team mostly focuses on property management companies that have a minimum of 200 doors. But through the TurboTenant partnership, we're able to access and tap into that lower segment of the market.
So partnerships can work really, really well, or they can just be terrible. Right. Like one of the problems I had at from Event Solutions days is everybody wanted us to be a partner with them and they wanted us to resell their product. But the question was always, why should I pay my salespeople to sell your product instead of selling my product, right? Like, why should I would make more money if I sell my product? So the key is with partnerships is usually it's got to be a win-win, right? Like if I sell your product, it helps me sell more of my product, and then it's a win-win. Or it's just like a affiliate sort of relationship. You don't have to do a whole lot of effort, but there, you know, unlocks a lot of additional revenue. So I'm curious, as you've worked with these kind of partners, have you struggled to make partnerships work as well? Or, you know, how do you pitch a partnership to them where it actually works and it's a win-win?
Yeah. So, you know, on the customer side, we've been very careful with the partners that we decide to move forward with, because there's a lot of overhead and work, right? And, you know, I feel like about 2% of the time they might work out, right? And I think we've been lucky on the customer side. We have not been so lucky on the contractor side. So we, and I won't mention names, but we've partnered with someone that we thought was going to help allow us to expand faster in new markets because they had access to a lot of contractors. We went through the process, you know, got an agreement in place. Our tech teams got together, did a deep integration, and, you know, 3 months in, we all realized this was not going to work, right? So it's, you have to be careful when you move forward with a partnership to really understand and that, you know, your vision is aligned and your ideal customer as customers are the same. In a lot of cases, you have to really be able to have a strong path forward, because you spend an enormous amount of time and money on a partnership, and if they don't work out, like, that's just lost time and resources. So we've been successful on the customer side, not so much on the provider side.
Because it's ultimately got to be a win-win. So on the customer side, is it, it's always been kind of a win-win, right? Because like they have a problem, they have work that needs to be done. You provide a new revenue stream probably to that vendor. And so it's kind of an easy win-win for them on that side.
Yeah, let me, you know, let's talk through AppFolio real quick. So they, AppFolio's got, we love their product. They've got a great property management software platform. It's one of the best in the market. They've got a huge amount of market share. But, you know, customers that we engage with, without a deep integration, there was gaps and lack of visibility sometimes in what was going on with the actual work order. And so by doing a deep two-way integration, we can now provide real-time visibility two ways, right? Back into their system of records so that they didn't have to also have our platform open, like have that swivel chair, if you will, right? And so it actually made AppFolio's product even stronger, and it allowed our customers to get the maintenance service they wanted from us, and they still have everything living in their system of record, which is AppFolio's PMS system. And so that was a really strong use case, and it's proved out to be very beneficial for both parties. So,
and did that create a great new revenue stream for them too?
Yeah. So they charge a recurring, you know, a membership fee, if you will. I don't know if membership fee is the right word, but they charge a fee in order to have access to the Stackfolio. If you're a customer of AppFolio and you want access to us through the integration, you're going to pay, you know, a small yearly fee. But the upside and value add that you get is tremendous. And so it also makes their product stickier, and we get what we want, the work, right? If we make it easier for our customer to send us the work, which is how, you know, we monetize the actual transaction in a take rate. So that's how we make our money. We just want the work. And so it's been a nice partnership.
So before we started recording, you mentioned that, you know, even though you guys made this pivot to B2C, you're dealing with property management, things are going really, really well. The business model still continues to change a little bit. You mentioned you were starting to do more like contracts and changing a little bit of how you deal with the property management firms, kind of to what you just mentioned. So I was curious if you could tell us a little more about, you know, how your kind of business model and how you sell to them is kind of continues to evolve, you know, as the company grows and evolves.
Yeah. When we first entered the property management space, we essentially said, look, we'll do an integration with your existing PM property management software system if we can. Sometimes it was a one-way integration where we could just consume and ingest that work order when it was kicked off, but couldn't always put the information back. Now we've got deeper integrations. But, you know, it was ad hoc. So it'd say, if you're a property management company, we enter into a relationship. There was no contract. You know, pay us a per door per month fee, no recurring fee. We're going to monetize the work that you send us, and you can send us as much as you want or as little as you want. But what we realized over time is our customers are like, we really, you know, we're having to staff up maintenance coordinators as we continue to grow. And once you get past, you know, 100, 200 doors, like there's maintenance tickets all day, every day. It never stops. And the larger you get, just the bigger that headache gets. And our customers were like, we really would love if you could actually just take all the inbound requests directly from our residents and take that off our plate so that we can, you know, lean up our operations a little bit and not have to worry about staffing maintenance coordinators. So last year we decided, you know, well, let's start talking to our customers to dig in a little bit there. And we actually moved towards a contract, a relationship. And so what it is, we have maintenance coordination as a service, almost as a contract, right? It's similar to that. And we enter in for at least a year. And what we tell our customers is, look, we're going to take over 100% of the inbound requests. That is completely off your plate. All your residents that are renting your properties, when they have a work order, they're going to submit a ticket directly to us or call on the phone for those that still do that. In exchange, you're going to guarantee that we're going to get 90% of your volume, right? So because that's how we make our money through the transaction. And we always get asked, well, why don't you ask for 100%? Well, we ask for 90% because some of our customers have in-house W-2 maintenance techs maybe that they want to keep busy, or maybe they have that, you know, plumber or HVAC contractor that they've been loyal to. They really want to try to keep him busy. But we ask for at least 90% volume, and it allows us to have a really big share of the wallet for our customers. We can quantify the net revenue value of each contract, and really allows us to enter into a partnership, right? Because we're in this together and working together to deliver the best maintenance service that we both can. And it's worked out really well for us, and it's really helped us have better predictability about our business finances moving forward and really deepen the relationships with our customers. And the results have been tremendous. We just did a case study with one of our very early contracts that we signed last year, and the results are tremendous for their business, which is what we love to see.
So you guys have been very successful with the property management, and these are, you know, primarily all single family homes. But I'm sure you've had a lot of people try and pull you into doing service for like Airbnb or like apartments or commercial property, all sorts of things. I'm curious, so how have you fought that battle over time of trying to stay focused? You know, do you get distracted trying to think about these other things? Like, how do you balance that?
No, we did experiment with Airbnbs for a while, but it's a different ball game. Every work order with a short term rental is an emergency, right? Because you got the person in there for a very short period of time, and we did fairly well. But all these things can be distractions. We've been asked for the last 3 years by home warranty companies to get involved in the home warranty space, and we've continually said no. We do plan commercials and retail. There's different licenses that need done with contractors for those two. Like every one of these different segments, there's a lot that comes with it. And there's the SFR space, single family rental space, is still huge. Like we have a very small percent of that market. And until we really grow and mature in that market, we try to say no to everything else. Now, multifamily is on the agenda for this year for us to get involved in multifamily rentals. But beyond that, we're going to say no to just about everything else because there's a lot deeper penetration that we can do, and we need to remain focused.
But that's hard, isn't it? Right? It's hard when somebody calls you up and like, hey, I'm in Kansas City right down the street. I've got 500 apartment, you know, in the city. Can you help me? It's got to be hard to say no every time.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to say no to revenue, right? But it can also disrupt what you're trying to build at the same time. It can be a disruption. It doesn't mean like 2-3 years from now that we won't be back in short-term rentals or we won't be doing retail spaces, because the model is similar, but there's enough. It goes back to just the technology platform. You talk about that 20 to 30% is just enough that it's a big undertaking. It's the same when you get in some of these other segments. So we still have a tremendous opportunity in the SFR space, and then we're going to jump to multifamily, and then we'll see where it goes years down the road.
Well, kudos to you for understanding the focus part of it. You know, do you feel like you have tried to do some of these things and learned that lesson kind of the hard way?
We short-term rentals, yes. That was kind of a lesson where, okay, it's not working the way that we need it to. It's different enough from long-term rentals that it just wasn't worth the uphill battle at the time. We got really close with a home warranty company, and that, you know, towards the end of, you know, finalizing agreement, we pulled the plug. There's too many different nuances there too. And so, if we're hitting our revenue goals and we're still growing, you know, at a really good clip, like, we're going to continue to say no and remain focused, you know, as long as the opportunity is still there.
So one of the things you told me earlier today was one of the hardest things you've had to figure out as a company, as a business, is hiring. And I'm curious if you tell us more about what you've learned about hiring. You know, you have about 70 employees or so. You know, what you've had to learn over time that has been a big change for you on the hiring side.
Well, I think finding the right candidates, right, is really important. Look, it's no secret, hiring and training is really expensive. And it's really expensive for the company if you just turn around a few months later and realize this isn't working, right? And you've got to make a change. So you want to get the candidates right and the hiring process right. I think for us, years ago when we first started, like, we had some core values on the wall that we, you know, it feels like at the time we kind of drew out of a hat. And really, as we evolved as a company, we really understood what our core values actually were, right? And I think, you know, on a wall we had like 10. If you asked me what those 10 core values were, I don't know if I could tell you, right? But, you know, now we've really dialed in to where we've got 5 core values, you know, and it's, you know, we're customer obsessed. I think a lot of companies have that, right? You have to be obsessed about your customers, you know, listen to the market and respond quickly. But we think differently. We hustle. We finish what we start, and we care for one another. Those are our core values now. And at the front end of hiring, you know, the very first step of the hiring process is to make sure the candidate agrees and aligns with those core values. If so, okay, now let's move to the next step. If not, thank you for your time. This probably isn't going to be a good place for you. So I think really understanding that's important, and it's helped us with hiring tremendously.
Now, are you guys all based in Kansas City, or are you hiring kind of nationwide?
So about 75% of our employees are here in the Kansas City office where I am today. But we do have, I mean, at some point when you get to a maturity level, you really want the best talent, and you can't always find that best talent in the city you're in, as much as I want everyone here. But we have, you know, our CTO is in the San Francisco area. Our director of product is in Chicago. We have a director of sales in Scottsdale. And then our director of provider success is in Denver. And then we have a few engineers that are outside of here as well. But for the most part, our staff is here in the office.
You know, you guys are an overnight success 8 years later.
That's usually how it goes, right? You know, we haven't done a lot of press lately. It's really, you get to this point where, you know, the revenue starts to get pretty big and the opportunity starts to get really big, and you have to put your head down and you just have to get to work. We're going to have some exciting things to announce this year, and probably back to back to back, which I'm super excited about. But last 2 years, we've been pretty quiet. We've just been head down. Let's get to work. You know, press can be fun, and I think you want people to know about your business and what you're working on. But sometimes you just got to get to work, and that's what we've been doing.
Well, what I love about your story is it's just a great niche business, software, like you said, tech enabled business. You know, a lot of people want to go build the next, you know, Facebook or this big thing and all this, where a lot of companies are more like yours. They're under the radar. They're solving real world problems, you know, property managers that literally have shit all over the place because the toilet exploded and needs to be fixed, right? Like, real world problems, right? And it's a great business, a fantastic business, it's a great story. And so glad you were on the podcast, you know, years ago and back on today. And thank you so much for joining us and doing this today.
Yeah, appreciate coming, you know, being allowed to get on here and give an update. I think that, you know, hopefully we can do this 3 years from now and have an update, right?
But absolutely.
Yeah, super happy to be here. It's always good to talk to you, Matt. And I'm always curious to what you're up to. And yeah, it's great. So thanks for having me.
Well, if anybody's out there and you need software developers, QA, anything to do with building software, check us out at FullScale, fullscale.io. No matter what your tech stack is, front end, back end work, mobile, QA, all different stuff, check us out at fullscale.io. Also, this episode is on YouTube. We are now on YouTube, so you can check us out and you can watch the video as well. Bo, thank you so much for being on the show today, and I look forward to that next update.
All right, Matt. Take care. Talk soon.
Thank you.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by FullScale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.